Welcome to the Motley Fool Radio Show. I'm David Gardner, broadcasting from Fool Global Headquarters here in Alexandria, Virginia, here each week to talk about the motley world of money and investing. Our thoughts and prayers continue to go out to everyone along the Gulf Coast. We know that the subject of money and business is not a subject that's front and center for many Americans right now, so our show is a motley show. We'll talk some money and business, we'll talk money and happiness, and we'll pick up some wisdom from a New Orleans high school baseball coach. But we begin the show by talking about the business aftermath of Hurricane Katrina with Motley Fool writer and analyst Stephen Simpson. Stephen has written a series of articles on the business implications of Hurricane Katrina. His most recent is entitled In the Wake of Katrina, A Broader View. And he's a CFA, so he's good with the numbers. He joins us from his home in Durham, North Carolina. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Stephen, your most recent article on Katrina entitled Wake of Katrina, A Broader View. So give us the broader view.
Well, first of all, we've just got to brace ourselves for what are going to be some somewhat unpleasant economic impacts over the next couple of quarters. I think we're going to see GDP lose about maybe 0.5% to a full percent of its growth rate over the next 1, 2, maybe even 3 quarters. You're going to see jobless claims go up because, obviously, a lot of these people in the affected regions have no jobs to go to anymore. And you might also even see a little bit of inflation picking up when the rebuilding starts. You could see some inflation in the meanwhile, say, from oil and fuel prices. That's not going to be good news for truckers or airlines, and they're going to have to try and pass that on. And then you will also see some possible inflation when the rebuilding starts from things like higher concrete prices, higher timber prices, and just the general bits and pieces that you need to build houses and repair the damaged areas.
Now, Stephen, the gross domestic product, I think, was projected to be something along the lines of maybe 4% for the quarter. That was before Katrina. You're mentioning an impact of 1% or so. Now, that's the gross domestic product. That's what our nation is producing. So it sounds like you still foresee positive economic growth despite this catastrophe.
Definitely. I mean, not to minimize the human cost of this, but it's a relatively small part of the country in terms of population and economic infrastructure. And frankly, we have a very large country with a very large economy. And the silver lining to this particular cloud is that it'll be bad for a couple of quarters, particularly in the South. And eventually there will be rebuilding and things will be okay again.
Stephen, I want to spot you up with a few different industries that will be affected by the hurricane damage and maybe get your thoughts what companies might be most affected since we are often a stock market show. Stephen, I want to start off with insurance. How is the insurance industry affected by Katrina and maybe some specific companies within it?
Well, obviously, this is the sort of thing that makes insurance executives wake up in the middle of the night sweating. There's a lot of damage, a lot of devastation, and this is what they're in business to do, to pay out when these things happen. Now, in terms of what you're going to see on the ground, so to speak, Allstate and St. Paul Travelers are probably your two biggest affected companies. They have the most home policies, the most car policies. You also have AIG that's heavily impacted as well. Now, the good news for these companies is that they lay off a lot of this risk to reinsurance companies. In other words, the insurers get insurance themselves to cover these catastrophes, knowing that they can't and really don't want to try and cover all of the losses themselves. And so, all in all, I would say Allstate, St. Paul, and AIG will come through this all right. They'll have a couple quarters that are going to look ugly. There definitely will be losses, but they're not in any real danger. Furthermore, if you look up the reinsurance companies, you're talking about companies like Berkshire Hathaway, Arch Capital, AXIS, Montpelier Re. These companies, again, they're going to report losses. Some of the losses are going to look really ugly on a quarter-by-quarter basis. But in the case of those four I just mentioned, all of these are well-run companies. These have managers who understand what they're doing, who are prepared for these kind of disasters, and the companies will get through. You may hear some stories about some, I don't want to call them fly-by-night, but let's just say less well-run companies out there that go bankrupt because, you know, they mispriced or they just didn't know what they were doing. Mm-hmm. But all in all, the big companies will come through this okay because, in fact, even the big reinsurance companies like Berkshire, even they have a layer of protection, which is called retrocessional insurance. That's what Lloyd's of London does, for example, and I think most people have heard of them. And so a lot of this risk is getting spread way across borders and boundaries. And so it'll knock down the business for a couple of quarters, but it's not going to knock down the companies. And furthermore, it may actually give them some pricing strength in a few months or a few quarters' time when they realize, hey, you know, people need this insurance. They just got a wake-up call that they need this insurance. Now we can raise our prices a bit.
Mm. Is it fair to assume that insurance companies will be paying more for reinsurance in the future?
I'd say that's a very fair assumption.
Let's next turn to banking.
Banking is another area where you're definitely going to see some turbulence for the next few quarters. You got companies like AmSouth, Regions Financial, and Hibernia, which is currently in the process of being acquired by Capital One. All of these companies are going to have disruptions. You have the basic business disruption of a lot of people lost their houses, lost their jobs. You have flooding, literally flooding in the streets. And so people are not going to be going about their daily business of depositing checks and whatnot. Then you also have the risk of credit losses. Most of these banks make a lot of their money by mortgage banking. Now, a lot of these people whose houses are destroyed or severely damaged clearly won't be making their mortgage payments. Now, you have the default process, you have the foreclosure process, you have the auction process, but let's be honest, you're not going to get, if you're a bank, you're not going to get the full value of that mortgage back to you from auctioning off land that was in the affected areas. And so, even though some of this is insured, expect to see banks in the area take some credit losses just due to the fact that people can't pay their mortgages. And last but not least, I'm also going to be looking for deposit outflows. For those people who got by relatively luckily and maybe just had some damage to the house, some damaged personal possessions, they're still going to be withdrawing money to help themselves with their rebuilding process.
And let's talk about rebuilding. There's a wonderful old economics book called Economics in One Lesson by Henry Hazlitt, and it begins with the story of a window being broken, and the spin that was put on it by the neighborhood was, hey, that's great, that's good news, because the glazier, the guy who comes in to fix the window, now has a job. And Hazlitt spends the rest of that opening of that book blasting that and pointing out that, sure, the glazier got hired, but the reality is the world would have been much better if resources could have been spent beyond fixing the window instead on something more productive. So that
right.
So let's then turn to building and construction. Obviously, there will be a lot of new building and reconstruction, I'm assuming, but overall, it's sad that it had to happen in the first place. This is not going to be a big boom, is it?
I don't think so. I think it's going to be sort of a mini-boom. In some senses, economics is like politics in the sense that it's all local. And it's probably going to cost somewhere in the vicinity of $50 to $100 billion to repair this region of our country. Now, that sounds like a tremendous amount of money, and relative to the economies of Louisiana and Mississippi, it certainly is. However, we have a $1.1 trillion annual construction market in this country, so you know, we're talking somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe a 5 to a 10% boost over 1, maybe 2, possibly even 3 years' time. So it'll be good for some companies, and it will certainly smooth things over for some companies, but we're not talking about a major boom here.
Hmm. Stephen, in your piece, you also write about the importance of the Port of New Orleans. We were surprised to learn that as much as 1/4 of the nation's coffee was sitting in New Orleans warehouses just before the storm.
That's right. The Port of New Orleans isn't all that large per se when you look at other ports like, say, Los Angeles, New York, and so forth. But what they do very well in the sense that it is a major hub for coffee, rubber, timber, and a lot of the grains that come down the Mississippi River from the Midwest. And in the case of coffee, as you mentioned, there's quite a bit of it sitting in the warehouses along the ports. Now, originally, a lot of people got really scared that coffee was going to get flooded and ruined, and the coffee futures contract went up pretty significantly. Now, though, it looks some of the people are actually getting in the warehouses. It's not looking quite as bad as people thought. Maybe we'll get by with having somewhere around half or so of the sitting inventory ruined, which isn't good, but make no moans about that. That's not a good thing, but it's not quite as bad as people initially feared. But you also have another angle here, at least on the coffee, which is you have Procter & Gamble and Sara Lee, both who operate in that area. And about half the country's Folgers coffee comes out of the New Orleans area. And so even if that coffee isn't rotting in its bags, you still have the issue of, you know, flooded plants, not enough power. You got to get your employees into the plant and where the employees are going to live and work and where their kids are going to go to school and so forth. So even though most of us never really think about where that morning cup of coffee comes from, there could be a couple quarters interruption, or at least maybe one quarter's interruption in prices, just from the fact that so much of it was damaged and those ships can't load up and move along.
Mm. To close, Stephen, does that port help guarantee that there will always be a New Orleans?
I think so. What a lot of people seem to forget sometimes is that New Orleans is an old city, and it grew up naturally in the sense that the French realized that that was a great port site. Everyone else who's lived there realized that was a great port site. And so the city built up to a large extent around that port. And you know, the Mississippi River is a great thoroughfare for goods, whether you're talking coal, iron, grain, what have you, coming down the river. It's a good thoroughfare for crude oil with the Louisiana offshore platform. And as I said, you know, a lot of the rubber and the coffee go through there. So I don't think there's any question about rebuilding the city and rebuilding it basically in that same place because, you know, a couple hundred years of economics have already shown us that that's a pretty good spot to put a port.
Mm. Thank you very much, Stephen Simpson. You can read his take each day throughout the week at The Motley Fool online at fool.com. Stephen Simpson, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.